Hi again, everyone. So we are back in the telecom space with Rogers Communications this morning. I am Jérôme Dubreuil, telecom analyst here at Desjardins. And we are happy this morning to host President and CEO Tony Staffieri, as well as CFO Glenn Brandt, 1 year and 1 day after the big announcement of the proposed merger with Shaw, a deal that's very topical for the company. And still, we've seen what's been happening in the sector lately. Gentlemen, good morning, and thanks for being with us despite everything that's happening.
Jérôme, thank you very much for having us.
Oh, yeah, good
great. Morning. Great. So we have about 25 minutes, so let's dive right into it. First subject, obviously, the proposed Shaw transaction. Following the letter from ICE Administrator Champagne from 2 weeks ago, I think we've gotten maybe a bit more clarity on what needs to be done on the wireless front to possibly gain approval. The first question is, are you confident that you'll find a way to divest at least some of Shaw's wireless assets as the government appears to be asking at this time?
Jérôme, thanks for the question. We continue, I'll say at the outset, continue to be confident that we'll close the transaction in the second quarter, as we've previously stated. I'm limited in what I can say, as the review is still ongoing, and we continue to be in active dialogue with the government bodies. Each of the regulatory bodies in cable and wireless are going through their review. The ICED minister's press release highlighted his commitment to measures that support competition and affordability, and we share the same view. We'll continue to work constructively with the government and regulators to address concerns and deliver on the benefits of the merger to all Canadians. We're not going to comment on specifics of the discussions and where we're at right with respect to any remedy process, but we continue to proceed as planned.
Right. Yeah, definitely appears to be on track with what the market has been expecting. Now, maybe more in the specifics of the integration plan, which I think will be very important in the next few quarters and years. If you can provide an update on the expected timeline of the 1 billion synergies, if this is still your target, and maybe a follow-up on this one. If there are remedies or divestitures, does that change your 1 billion synergy target?
Let me start off by saying that the integration and synergy target of $1 billion that we announced continues to be on track, and we're committed to that. We've said from the very outset that those synergy benefits largely and frankly almost entirely rests with the cable side of the business, and so it's irrespective of any remedy package, and that's what we're committed to achieving. Against that backdrop, I'll allow Glenn to sort of spend a moment to walk you through where we're at and where we see those synergies.
Thank you, Tony. Thanks, Jérôme. So the $1 billion remains the target. We are on track and have a number of work streams across each of the our business units identifying those synergies. We anticipate we will achieve the $1 billion target over 2 years. They will come from where you would anticipate. In some areas being headcount, elimination of redundant operations, particularly head office and back office functions. They will also come from areas where you might not, look first on sourcing. For example, with acquiring the wireline facilities in Western Canada, it provides a tremendous opportunity for us to interconnect more of our cell sites, for example, with fiber, and to rely less on a more costly microwave backhaul. That brings those fiber costs in-house, but it also then eliminates and sheds a significant portion of the microwave backhaul costs that we otherwise have been relying upon. We will also be looking to identify through our vendors. One of my responsibilities before taking on the CFO role was overseeing our procurement and supply chain operations. And there will be a tremendous opportunity with the increased scale we gain with the acquisition of Shaw's connected home business or wireline business, a tremendous opportunity to take advantage of the almost doubling of the or practical doubling of the economies of scale through the combination of the two businesses to do two things. One, we will be able to drive better pricing with our vendors, but two, with the challenges in supply chain and the volumes that we will be looking to order, I anticipate that we will see some significant improvements in sourcing materials, whether it's customer premise equipment, whether it's network materials, and I anticipate that's going to be a source of synergy as well. So we're busy working on each of those fronts to the extent possible ahead of the transaction, and some of those will fill in even greater earnest once we close on day one.
Yeah, makes sense. Probably reduces the cost, but also reduces the risk given the size and the importance you will have for these suppliers. Great, thanks for this. And now, in terms of the strategy, moving away from the specifics of the transaction, obviously there have been significant changes to the management team in the last few months. What's the most significant shift in terms of strategy or directive that you have implemented or plan on implementing?
Jerome, I would say me and the management team are focused on three priorities that we've been very consistent on. One is completing the Shaw transaction. The second item is increasing the investments in our networks and customer service. And the third is really just better execution. And when I talk to, you know, the last one, and I'll work my way up, in terms of better execution, what we're getting at is really monetizing the assets better than we have in the past. And so we genuinely believe that we sit with the best network assets in both cable and wireless. And on the media side, focused on sports media, continues to be the dominant growing in media in North America. And so we genuinely believe we have the right assets. On the wireless side, we have the largest wireless network across the nation, most reliable network when you look at the cable assets, and soon to include the Shaw assets, will be coast to coast and enabled for 1 gig and in some places 1.5 gigs. And right. On the Cable Labs 10G roadmap, we'll have capabilities that not only keep us very much competitive and leading in terms of network, but well ahead of where consumer and business demand is in terms of speed and reliability. And you'll continue to see that validated through independent research and validation and claims. So we genuinely believe we have the best network. We're investing heavily in customer service and moving that up. And so when you look at our capital allocation, we're moving to much more on network. This year, about 80% of our total capital program will be on cable and wireless network deployment specifically. And that's not only on quality, but expanding the coverage as well to include rural areas. And the execution on that asset really revolves around our sales execution, our go-to-market. You'll start to see a much more focused approach on our mass marketing campaigns that center around the product superiority that that we believe we have. And then finally, on the Shaw transaction and the key steps there, we've always said that the key ones were getting regulatory approval, which I've spoken about, making sure that we are prepared to execute on the synergies, which Glenn just mentioned. And the last one is making sure we have the right balance sheet. And we've just gone through and completed the financing that's going to be needed for the transaction.
Right. And since you alluded to your network performance, you know, as telecom investors often try to compare to companies, they look at the structure of the network. and your network is mostly based on a hybrid fiber coax structure, which brings the DOCSIS question. That might be a bit early, but if you can discuss the extent of the performance runway you see on this technology.
Sure. As you said, Jerome, I think it's important that we continue to invest in both the coax developments together with Cable Labs, as well as deploying fiber. And we've been deploying fiber in our network for 10 to 15 years now. And so all new deployments are fiber. And so, as you would expect, not only direct to the home or to the suites, we have areas where that are all fiber, but as well in terms of node segmentation. We sit in a pretty unique position with a cable background in that what we always call that last mile is really going to benefit from the developments. The Cable Labs 10G program is really focused on 10 gigs of download speed, six gigs of upload speed. And you know, today, if you were to look at the number of customers that sit at 1 gig, so putting aside 10 gig, it would be about 10 to 15%. So clearly, the technology roadmap is going to be well ahead of consumer demand, and we can do that at a very cost-effective approach. You saw when we went to 1 gig, we did that with very modest capital investments, and our expectation is as we move to 10 gigs, it'll be very similar. And so so it's a very efficient technology for us that we intend to monetize and capitalize as a competitive advantage in the marketplace.
Great. That's definitely helpful. And now, still on technology, we've heard you discussing more and more about fixed wireless. I'm trying to assess the materiality of this opportunity. And also, obviously, this will probably be using your wireless network. So what do you think can be done with your current network capacity or CapEx envelope?
On the fixed wireless access side, we see that as a big opportunity of using our national wireless network, particularly as we close the transaction with Shaw, to provide in-home services, fixed wireless access. That we offer will be up to 50 megs of download speed. And that's capable of running streaming video as well with our Ignite platform. And so it is particularly well suited to what we would call rural coverage. Our network covers much of urban as well as some rural, but in those pockets where we don't have fiber or coax coverage, it's well suited to that. We've already enabled our entire wireless network to be able to handle fixed wireless access solutions for homes and businesses. And so you'll start to see that. The proof point you'll see is the disclosure of the number of fixed wireless access homes that we are deploying to. And we are early in the ramp-up stage. But we see the opportunity for homes passed in the hundreds of thousands, not in the tens of thousands. And so it's a terrific growth opportunity to augment the wired network that we have.
Right. So, and if maybe, I just, yeah,
Jerome,
sorry, go ahead,
Glenn. If I could just jump in quickly. 2 years ago, almost to the day, I started working from home exclusively, and I'm not in a Rogers territory. I live on a farm road about an hour west of Toronto, and my wireline access was spotty. The audio and the video weren't reliable, and so within the first couple of weeks of working from home, I became a user of our fixed wireless solution. And over the course of 2 years, with video conference calls throughout the day, over the course of that 2 years, I dropped only 5 calls. The audio, the video came through clearly, always reliable, and to the point that there were several others in the company that that I also managed to move over. As they started working up at their cottage, I had several bankers call me asking me for the same solution. It works in rural areas where you otherwise can't get a fast feed, and for me it was indispensable.
Yeah, that's great color. Way to test the product for sure. And lastly, on this, do you anticipate this technology will mostly be deployed in rural areas? Obviously, we're seeing different strategies in the U.S. probably because of different market structure. What's your expectation on that front?
Well, I think you said it appropriately, Jerome. In the U.S., you see a different makeup with some of the wireless players using it more broadly because of their limited wireline capabilities. In our case, we are fortunate to have a national network in wireless, as well as a soon-to-be national network on the cable wireline side as well. And so that will always... to the extent that we have fiber or a combination of coax and fiber to the home, that will be the superior technology for the reasons that I just spoke about. But in places where we don't have that coverage or don't have it yet, fixed wireless access is going to be a very good solution. So think about it for us as something that will augment our network of over 8 million homes passed. To homes and businesses that are on the fringe or even further out. And as I said, the capability of it for internet as well as video, including video conferencing for business applications, is very robust and works particularly well.
Right. Thanks for this. That's it for my questions on fixed wireless. Now, moving on to the more maybe traditional mobile service. The economy is reopening right now, hopefully for good. Wondering about the impact of this reopening on your ARPU. So maybe if you can touch on the recent trends that you've been seeing specifically on roaming, but also if you can dive into the relationship you expect there will be between maybe increased data consumption and the ARPU you're getting on the gross ads.
Sure. I'll start with that. What I'll it might help if I provide a bit of context in terms of revenue growth overall for wireless, and I'll talk about ARPU as one component of it. But I think it's important to highlight just the growth of the market. In the fourth quarter, we saw the market grow almost 5% when you look at it, and we're seeing very similar trends in Q1. And so as we as things start to open up, we're seeing good continued growth and good execution in our distribution channels that have always been leading. And you're seeing that take effect. And so we're fairly confident with our market share execution as we make our way and close the first quarter. That's going to be continue to be, in our view, a growth engine for the industry overall. In terms of volume and a number of things feeding that, starting with the wireless penetration rates in Canada still being underpenetrated, immigration continuing to grow at healthy levels, and other things that we've spoken about. The second piece relates to ARPU, as you said, and right now the biggest ARPU driver that we're seeing is roaming. As travel both into Canada as well as for our customers outside of Canada continues to pick up. We're seeing very healthy levels of roaming revenue resume. I would say largely on track and maybe slightly better than we expected by this time. And so we're pleased with the resumption of that revenue growth. And then the second piece relates to the underlying subscription ARPU. And what we do know is we worked our way through the pandemic over the last few years is as soon as consumers are able to move more freely outside of the home, we see a lot of the same habits and behaviors. And what I'm getting at is really video usage in the home, move outside [S2] Right. [S1] Of the home. And so you see data usage grow exponentially. You know, something that would otherwise be 20% year on year while we're in lockdown mode, jumping to over 50%. And that makes the case for the unlimited data plans much more compelling. And so while we continue to see growth, our expectation is we ought to expect to see as the use case for those plans become more important that we'll see a good migration of underlying ARPU as well. We expect to see that in the following quarters. We see some this quarter, but we expect that pacing to pick up.
Yeah, great. Yeah, that makes sense. With regard, this brings the question probably on 5G, you know, with the behavior of data consumption translating into the post-COVID world, really increased the data consumption. When do you expect we can possibly start seeing an inflection point in 5G monetization? And maybe if you can also touch on the most tangible growth or cost-saving opportunity that the new standard will bring.
Well, I'll start and then have Glenn add to it. But I'll start with the second part of your question. You know, the cost advantages of 5G are really going to be the quantum of data that it can transport with a whole bunch of benefits in terms of low latency, et cetera. And that's been written and talked about quite a bit. The key part of your question is how do we and when do we start to see the monetization of that? And our Kirkland Lake example is a good example of private area network where the attributes of 5G make a solution for, in that instance, a very remote area in terms of robotics, monitoring, and I include in there, you know, IoT.
Right.
We expect to see those enterprise applications like those and beyond continue to move. I would say in the near term, we would expect the incremental revenue to not be that significant. And it's really going to depend on, you know, what I would term the use cases and the software applications evolving to capitalize on the 5G technology, not unlike what we saw when we went from 3G to 4G. It took a bit of time for the applications to be developed and to take hold. But no doubt, what history has shown us is the applications will always push the limits of technology, and that can only mean increased usage and therefore increased opportunities for revenue. And so don't want to get too far ahead of ourselves,
right,
in terms of what that revenue profile looks like. It's still very nascent, to be clear. But we continue, like the rest of the global industry with 5G, continue to be optimistic about what it could bring.
Right. Not many saw companies like Uber coming with the arrival of 4G for sure. So difficult to predict. And also, we might see an inflection point with the deployment of 3.5 gigahertz that will probably make a bigger difference between 4G and 5G. On that, on spectrum, more specifically, obviously, it's very difficult to predict what could happen in the future on that front. But maybe if you can discuss the reasons why we should be either concerned or reassured on why the cost could potentially be different in the upcoming 3800 spectrum auction versus the one we had last summer.
Jerome, I'm not going to comment too much on the specifics of the 3800 megahertz auction. Very limited in what I can say, and more importantly, you know, these auctions are always a function of supply and demand, and we'll need to see what that looks like. But I can tell you when we look to the 3500 auction and our results there, this is important shortwave, millimeter wave spectrum for us and for the industry to enable 5G, particularly as we look to capitalize on our national network. And now with the Shaw transaction, that's going to be, as you know, Glenn talked about when he mentioned synergies, critically important to have that additional backhaul for not only the macrocytes, but a lot of the small cells as well. And so you then layer on top of that the need for the 3800 megahertz. And, you know, in the 3500, you saw us purchase license in 169 of the 172 regions available. And we'll continue to look to have the dollars to be able to invest in that kind of coverage so that we will continue to have leading networks as we look to those 5G solutions that we just talked about.
Yeah, makes sense. Spectrum is definitely critical. And then I think we have time for one last question. That will be on cable. Obviously, your main competitor on the wireline side is in the midst of a large fiber investment program. What are the levers you can pull to maintain market share on that front? We've seen you make significant changes at the helm of the cable segment. So, what can you do to fight in this new market?
Jerome, I'll come back to where we started. I think when we look at our cable assets, we're confident that we have the best product available in the marketplace. We lead, if you were to look across our entire footprint in terms of internet speeds, and internet reliability is validated by third parties. So we have the best internet across our entire footprint. We have a minimum of 1 gig, and in some cases, we have 1.5 gigs. Most customers would sit in the 150 to 300 speed range. And so our capabilities are well ahead of where the market is. And as I said, on a broad basis, ahead of where the competition is. And then you layer on top of that our video applications, which is largely the Comcast Xfinity platform. Right. And as consumer habits migrate from what we call linear video viewing or linear television to integrate OTT platforms such as Netflix, Prime, Video, Disney Plus, and there are more to come that we'll announce shortly. The product superiority is obvious and compelling. You combine that with Ignite Wi-Fi, which offers a number of security features, and then our smart home monitoring, which again is the Comcast platform. And so as we, in particular, roll out that IP platform nationally, including the Shaw footprint, we're really excited about our competitive advantage. And so comes back to, as I said, with some of the changes we're making in the management team, very focused right. execution to capitalize on those assets.
Great. That I think that's a great way to wrap it up here. So definitely, that's all the time we had. I think your story will be very exciting to follow, especially in the next few weeks with everything that's coming. So, Glenn and Tony, thanks a lot for your time and thanks for participating with us.
Thank you for having us, Jerome.
Thank you very much.
Enjoy your day.